The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
There's a reason that we live so far from Hollywood. In the country, looking hard to find a home. With nothing perfect or considered.
Bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway where it rained all night. Intermittent sleep as the rain swept over D.C., which is appropriate because of the doom and gloom of the blue check media out there proclaiming the end of days because of Bob Woodward's tapes of the president. Look, I'm about to play you the three excerpts that were put out yesterday. This is how you sell books. You get 20 hours of tapes, and everybody talked to Woodward on this. I happen to know everybody talked to Bob Woodward on this one. And Like Fear, which is sitting on my shelf in my studio, this book, what's it called, Rage, it will be a fine read. It will be fully, completely detailed. You'll get the picture of the president in the hole, and he'll emerge fairly portrayed. But that's not how you sell books. You don't release the best parts of the Trump tapes. You release the parts that can then be manipulated to suggest he's a horrible person, which is exactly what was his publisher last time? Was it, let me look over here. I assume he's still with Simon & Schuster. He was Simon & Schuster last time, which is what Simon & Schuster wants. They want people talking about the book. So they put out these three excerpts. Let's start with the Kool-Aid excerpt, cut number 33.
Do you have any sense that that privilege has isolated and put you in a cave to a certain extent? Is it put me and I think lots of white privileged people in a cave, and that we have to work our way out of it to understand the anger and the pain, particularly black people feel in this country?
Do you No, you really drank the Kool-Aid, didn't you? Just listen to you. Wow. No, I don't feel that at all.
Listen to you. I've gotten that from the president a couple of times. Then cut number 31 on the virus.
Now it's turning out it's not just old people, Bob, but just today and yesterday, some startling facts came out. It's not just older
yeah, exactly.
young people, to plenty of young people.
So give me a moment of talking to somebody, going through this with Fauci or somebody who kind of it caused a pivot in your mind, because it's clear just from what's in on the public record that you went through a pivot on this to, oh, my God, the gravity is almost inexplicable and unexplainable.
Well, I think, Bob, really, to be honest with you.
Sure, I want you to.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to create a panic.
Okay, that's March 19th. And by that time, most of the country is beginning to wake up. I was on this from December, but that's me. Here's the one that's most controversial, cut 31 from February 7th, the President Woodward.
Well, what was President Xi saying yesterday?
Well, we were talking mostly about the virus, and I think he's going to have it in good shape, but, you know, it's a very tricky situation. It's
it goes
through air, Bob. That's always tougher than the touch. You know, the touch, you don't have to touch things, right? But the air, you just breathe the air. That's how it's passed. And so that's a very tricky one. That's a very delicate one. It's also more deadly than your, you know, your even your strenuous flus. This is more deadly. This is 5 per... You know, this is 5% versus 1% and less than 1%. You know, so this is deadly stuff.
Okay, so that's February 7th. Now you're saying to yourself, so what's the controversy about? Because of the way it's been portrayed. That's the entire excerpt. And you're nodding along, say, yeah, okay, the president talked to Xi and found out it's airborne. Of course, he doesn't know at this point the Chinese have lied to the WHO. But you know, he finds out he's airborne. He tells Woodward it's airborne. Then he says on March 19th, this is a pretty tricky stuff. This is, I don't want to panic people. And then the white privilege stuff is completely aside. There's nothing here that's news. This was all on the public record. As Woodward said on March 19th, you've made a pivot. You're getting more and more concerned. Because the shutdown of the incoming from China did not accomplish the sequestration of the virus because it came through Europe, as people remember. And there is no cover-up. There is no hiding. There is no scandal. Now, the president himself went out and talked about this yesterday to the he's wrong to lump Woodward in with all the journalists who are selling the book on behalf of Simon and Schuster. Cut number 11.
How do you reassure the American public going forward that they can trust what you're saying?
Well, I think that's really a big part of trust. We have to have leadership. We have to show leadership. And the last thing you want to do is create a panic in the country. This was a horrible thing. It was sent to us by China. Should not have happened. Should never have happened. This is a disgusting, terrible situation that was foisted upon us, and we have to show, we just don't want to use, the best word is panic. We don't want to have to show panic. We're not going to show panic. And that's exactly what I did. And I was very open, whether it's to Woodward or anybody else. It's just another political hit job. But whether it was Woodward or anybody else, you cannot show a sense of panic or you're going to have bigger problems than you ever had before. Please.
He's right. And when I discussed it in December and January, and when I had on Tom Cotton in January and everybody else talking about the danger that this represented, never with panic, always with you'll be able to contain. He's right. Then on WEC West Palm Beach, the president says this about the vaccine, cut number 14.
Now, the only thing that plays a role is life. I want people to live. I want people to be able to get out of this nightmare. We've done a great job with the ventilators, and now you'll see with the vaccines and therapeutics. But most importantly, to me, a great job is getting it over with. We saved millions of lives by closing, and now we open. It's really a super V. You understand what a super V is. We're setting records on jobs and so many other things. But no, I just, this has nothing to do, politics has nothing to do with it. This is a great thing for our country, and frankly, a great thing for the world, because this will go worldwide.
So I know blue check Twitter is all a Twitter with, oh, the president lied to us. No, he didn't. Oh, Bob Woodward should have revealed this. There wasn't anything to reveal that wasn't on the public record. People like me were talking about this in December and January, and the president always, you know, he tried to keep the cruise ship away, always aware of the risk, trying to play it the same way. It's not the end of the world story that blue check Twitter thinks it is. In fact, it reveals the anti-Trump bias of blue check Twitter. The biggest story yesterday, and the reason you should vote for Donald Trump, he released the new Supreme Court list. He expanded the list of potential candidates, and he added on Paul Clement. He added on Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton. I think Tom Cotton would throw himself from the top of the Supreme Court after 2 months if he was a Supreme Court justice. But look, I've only been in the building once. Actually, up to the offices once. And I think that the life of a justice is not the life of Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz or Tom Cotton. But Paul Clement would be fine up there. And there were, and Allison Ede Rushing is a terrific judge on the Fourth Circuit. I'm excited about that one. But Trump went on Hannity last night, and the president said this about the judges. Cut 29.
Outside of War and Peace, the most important thing a president does is select Supreme Court justices and judges. You know, we're going to have
probably over 300 by the end of my first term, which is a record. Over 300 federal judges and Court of Appeals judges, too. So that's a number that nobody thought even possible. And we will have that number, and it'll be all confirmed and done and great. And also Supreme Court judges or justices. And the whole country, it depends on these decisions, which way you go, whether you have a Second Amendment or not. I mean, the Second Amendment would be under siege if I wasn't here. You wouldn't have a Second Amendment right now. You wouldn't have a right to guns. You would, whether you had it or it was just almost totally obliterated, but it would be in a very different form than you have it now. I've kept it totally as it was, and it's something I'm very proud of. And people, I think it's a real voting issue, a Second Amendment life. You look at that. So these judges are going to be making massive decisions, and the next president is going to get 1, 2, 3, or 4 justices of the Supreme Court.
He's absolutely right. And that list is a much bigger story than what he said to Woodward in February and March. But that's not what you're going to hear all day long from the anti-Trump media. I started with the excerpts so no one could say you're covering. These excerpts are not the story they're being made out to be. The Supreme Court list is the story that's being ignored because the anti-Trump media doesn't want the voter to focus on what matters most. Stay tuned, America. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.
It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America.
Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Keep in mind that list that Trump released yesterday of the Supreme Court justices who expand his list. And he has not taken Judge Willett off the list. He has not taken Judge Strauss off the list. He has not taken Judge Ketledge off the list. He has added people to the list, including Daniel Cameron, the dynamic Attorney General of Kentucky. He has added Allison Ede Rushing, one of my favorites, to go along with other great judges on that list. He didn't remove anyone. He just added more people. And that's terrific. It focuses the mind on the most important thing after military security, national security, followed by the Supreme Court. And it's really terrific. Let's get the key quote of Joe Biden yesterday, cut number 7.
He promised then candidate Trump to do starts I'm announcing some addition today. I'm announcing
That's a montage of him coughing. It's edited. I point that out that just Joe had a bad speech yesterday, but they found the part where he accuses the president of causing a recession via negligence. We're not in a recession. In fact, let me do the market update right now. Market rebounded yesterday, so let's talk about it. Brought to you by our friends at Birch Gold, which you can find at hughgold.com. Or you can text my name, Hugh, to 474747. They prefer that for some reason. They love the texts at Birch Gold. My name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747, or go to hughgold.com. Roll over 10, 25% of your IRA, something like that, to anchor your holdings in retirement in physical metals, or add to your physical metals in the safety deposit box, but always have some physical metals. That's via Birch Gold, hughgold.com. Yesterday on the market, Amazon, which is the tech sector proxy, went up $118. It got slammed 3 days in a row. went down like $500 or $600. No, I did not sell a share. I bought Amazon. Why? Because I think it's a $5,000 stock, and I knew there was a profit taking going on. I do not believe in day trading. I just believe in buying and holding. And so I am not Mr. Day Trader. Don't take advice from me. The mutual funds are dollar cost averaging. They just go in on a monthly basis from my savings. But market generally had a very nice day yesterday. The Dow was up 439 points. The NASDAQ up 293 points, and the S&P up 67. Overseas this morning, Germany is up 0.4 and England is down 0.4. So they don't know what to do because they can't figure out whether the United States is off to the races on another tech rise, which seems to me likely, or whether or not they're going to rotate into value stocks from growth stocks. I don't know. I don't make predictions. I just tell you the 10-year treasury is at 0.7%. Gold is at 1957, up 10%, 1%, not 10%, 0.1% from yesterday. It remains a rock in a financial harbor. It's looking very good for the V-shaped recovery. Donald Trump yesterday spoke on his list of nominees, cut number two.
Like those distinguished individuals, the 20 additions I am announcing today would be jurists in the mold of Justices Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito. Their names are as follows. Bridget Beatty of Arizona, judge on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Daniel Cameron of Kentucky, Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Paul Clement of Virginia, former Solicitor General of the United States.
Pause it there. I want people to hear the whole list. I think we'll go back and start it over. He's reading from a prompter to make sure he gets the names right. Each one of them is extraordinary. And as the president said on Hannity last night, there's going to be one, two, three, and maybe four. He's counting on everyone over 70 retiring in the next 4 years, which is not likely. There are between one and four Supreme Court judges coming. Every one of these potential nominees, except Senator Cotton, who would be a great Supreme Court justice, except they'd have to put rubber on the walls in the Supreme Court for Tom Cotton to go to the Supreme Court. Honestly, he would be bouncing off the walls. But they'd all be great justices. That's why you should vote for Donald Trump, because of the Supreme Court and the military. Stay tuned, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. National Security Advisor Ambassador Robert O'Brien on with Brett Baer last night. Important interview. I want you to hear it. Here goes.
Quote in this book about the COVID threat, January 28th in the Oval Office, you're quoted to say to the president, quote, "This will be the biggest national security threat you face in your presidency. This is going to be the roughest thing you face." Is that true?
It is true. It was during one of our Oval Intelligence briefs, and it was something we were concerned about. At the NSC, our job is to look around the corner and see threats that maybe the IC or other folks aren't seeing. It was a threat we saw, and we conveyed it to the president. And by the way, he took very prompt action within 48 hours of that warning. And at the time, there were no deaths in the U.S., very few cases. He banned travel, from China within 48 hours of us giving that advice. And there were very few people who thought that was a good idea at the time other than the president. So I give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, the actions are one thing. He often talks about those. But what he's saying to Bob Woodward behind the scenes in these interviews is different than what he's saying publicly about it. Do you see a disparity there?
No, I don't see a disparity. I mean, look, we saw the threat of a pandemic. I'm not a public health professional or a doctor. We thought that this would be could potentially be a widespread pandemic. I'd seen this in a prior administration, the Bush administration, when we saw SARS. We've seen swine flu, avian flu come out of China. And we know that communist parties, their first reaction to something is to cover it up. So we had a gut feel that the Chinese communists would cover this up the same way the Soviets did with Chernobyl. So we saw a real threat. Of course, we didn't know at the time, and the WHO was saying that there was no human-to-human transmission at the time. The Chinese were downplaying it. We didn't know how it would play out as a virus. It turned out to be resilient and nasty. But at the time, we saw the threat of a pandemic. The president took extraordinary action But at the same time, he didn't want to panic folks, and the public health professionals and the WHO and others were downplaying the threat. So I think he took just the right approach. He was calm. He was resolute. He was confident. And in the month of February, he got the vaccine program going. He got the therapeutics program going. He got the ventilator program going. And we've done things that haven't been done since World War II in this country.
Well, on February 7th, he says China's working very hard. Late last night, he had a very good talk with President Xi. This is him on February 7th. And he goes on to talk about how it's passed through the air, the coronavirus. I guess there are multiple times where he talks about it's going to go down to zero. We could play a montage of sots after February 7th where he says it's going to wash away the COVID coronavirus. And your critics, the president's critics, are saying because of that, tens of thousands of people died instead of having action that could have warned them. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, well what they're saying just is flatly wrong. It's not true. So, look, the president saved thousands and thousands of lives, first by making the decision on January 30 and announcing on January 31 that we're banning travel from China. Second, by standing up the biggest industrial program to create ventilators. Remember, at the start of this, Brett, folks were saying that doctors are going to have to make terrible decisions and give young people ventilators and take old people off ventilators and all that sort of thing. That never happened. Not only did we the stockpile of ventilators that we inherited was diminished, we rebuilt the stockpile. We made sure that every American who needed a ventilator had one, and we've given out over 16,000 ventilators around the world. So that's what we were, you know, standing up in February. So it was saving lives. Same with PPE production in the United States. Same with vaccine production. We're going to have a vaccine within a year of this virus taking hold here, which has never happened before. Yeah. So the president took extraordinary action to save people's lives. But at the time that he made those statements, we were being told by many people, by the WHO, by the Chinese themselves, it turned out not to be true, by public health professionals here, that there wasn't a risk, that the virus would go away with warm weather and things like that. All of those things were being told to us. It turned out they weren't true, unfortunately. But the president was taking action, notwithstanding what the establishment and the general opinion of this virus was. He was taking action to prepare for the worst, and he saved thousands of lives as a result.
I want to ask you a couple more things about the book and a couple of more topics, but why did the president sit down with Bob Woodward 18 times? He's got 20 hours of tape.
Well, listen, the president has been able to make his case to the American people. He's answered more questions probably than any president in history, at least any president in my lifetime. He spends a lot of time with the press. He spends a lot of time with the press, whether it's walking to the chopper or at Air Force One or in the briefing room. And he gives a lot of one-on-one time. And so I think and he's willing to take the hard, tough questions from journalists who are probably opposed to him. So I think the president made a decision that he was willing to go into the lion's ring with Bob Woodward, who's the toughest investigative reporter of all time. And I think he felt confident making that decision. If Bob Woodward's put together, and I haven't read the book, if he's put together a book that wasn't kind towards the president, that's really a shame.
He concludes the book saying that the president's not fit. So I think you can get that judgment. You're quoted in the book a couple of times, but the president tells Woodward about a weapons system. He says, I've built a weapons system nobody's ever had in this country. We have stuff that you haven't seen or heard about. We have stuff that Putin and Xi have never heard about before. There's nobody. What we have is incredible. It says that national security officials were surprised that he talked about that, since a lot of it is classified. What is he talking about?
Well, look, I'm not going to get into what he's talking about, but you can rest assured that the men and women who manufacture our weapons and who have always had us on the cutting edge, whether it was back in the old days of the F-117 Nighthawk to the B-2 bomber to the F-22, F-35, we're always on the cutting edge, and we've always got something out there that our adversaries don't know about. The president didn't talk about any specific weapon system, but you can rest assured that we can protect the United States of America against any foe, any threat that's out there because of the excellent manufacturing that we do here, the research and development that we do here, and the fine men and women, the servicemen and women who man those platforms.
Speaking about that, after the Atlantic piece, the president on Monday said this about military leadership.
I'm not saying
that. Oh, sorry, I think that soundbite went to... Here you go. Let's listen.
I'm not saying the military is in love with me. The soldiers are. The top people in the Pentagon probably aren't, because they want to do nothing but fight wars so that all of those wonderful companies that make the bombs and make the planes and make everything else stay happy.
Many of these leaders have sons and daughters who have gone to combat or may be in combat right now. So, you know, I can assure the American people that the senior leaders would only recommend sending our troops to combat when it's required for national security and in the last resort.
Obviously, the Army Chief of Staff. Do you believe that the senior leadership wants to send people to war?
Well, you know, look, I think the point that the president was making was a very similar point that Dwight Eisenhower made in his valedictory address as president when he talked about the military-industrial complex. And he's been lionized and lauded by, you know, across the political spectrum. The president just made a similar point. Like, the troops love the president. The president has supported the troops. He's increased the defense budget from those terrible days of sequestration that we had under Obama-Biden, when literally the troops didn't have the ammunition and the readiness and the tools necessary to defend themselves. That's been turned around. And like Ronald Reagan, the first president since Ronald Reagan who hasn't started a war. So the president would like to get our troops, soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines home to the extent we can. We want to shift those burdens to our partners and allies. And we want to bring our troops home. And I think he was making that point. He's got a great relationship with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, with the other senior leaders in the Pentagon, uniformed leaders in the Pentagon. And I've seen that up close and personal. I know they have tremendous affection for him.
Obviously, you know, he often, with world leaders, talks about how much they're buying from the defense industrial complex and what weapons they're buying and how much they're paying. So it's just an interesting thing that raised eyebrows. I want to ask you about this. The UAE...
Well, look, we want our partners to burden share. Absolutely, Brett. I mean, we can't, the American taxpayer can't afford to defend the entire free world as it has. And so we want our allies and our partners to spend some of their own money. Some of them are very wealthy countries like Germany and the Gulf Arab states and that sort of thing. So we want them to buy the equipment that they need to defend themselves. We'll be there side by side.
Speaking about burden sharing, the UAE-Israel deal signing is next week. Will there be other Arab-Israeli delegations that make that decision before Election Day?
You know, none of this is driven by election day politics. I mean, these are very hard negotiations to go through, as you saw since the UAE-Israel deal, and that was a signal deal. It's the first time in 25 years that we've had such a deal, and I was lucky enough to be on the first commercial flight, LL flight, from Ben Gurion Airport to Abu Dhabi International Airport last week. And it was a very emotional experience for the people on the plane and for the host that received us at the UAE. Since that time, Kosovo, Muslim-majority country, has said that they're going to recognize Israel and move their embassy to Jerusalem. I think you're going to see other countries do it, but they're complex, difficult negotiations. I don't know if we'll get it done by any certain date, but we're working hard on it.
Obviously, the news of the Nobel Peace Prize nomination not getting through today, but you're happy about that, as is the president, I'm sure.
Well, I've always said that the president came into office he was known as a deal maker. He's going to leave office known as a peacemaker. When you look at what he's done in Afghanistan, negotiating a ceasefire between the Turks and the Kurds, normalizing relations between the UAE and Israel, between Kosovo and Serbia, and I think there's more to come. He's got a pretty impressive record. I don't know if anyone else has has a record similar, and so he should get the prize. I don't know what the committee will do or not.
And the withdrawal of troops from Iraq and the same thing with Afghanistan, nothing to do with Election Day?
No, you know, look, the president campaigned on ending the forever wars, but he also campaigned on burden sharing. And so one of the things that is the untold story of Iraq, and I saw your piece earlier, Jennifer Griffin's piece, is that we now have 1,800 NATO troops working side by side with our troops on train and assist and countering ISIS. I think the number of NATO troops is going to go up. Our European allies are in Iraq. I think that allows us to draw down. And the same thing in Afghanistan. So, look, we need to resolve these conflicts. We need to do it in a manner that preserves the way of life of the Afghan people, the Iraqi people. And we need to bring as many of our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines home as possible. And part of that is by ending conflicts with peace agreements. And part of that is by getting our allies to step up. And no one's had more success on that front than the president.
There is an investigation, a whistleblower complaint alleging the DA... HHS suppressed intel reports on Russian election interference. The complaint itself refers back to you saying that this specifically instruction specifically originated from you. Is that true? This has to do with a former under secretary, acting secretary for Homeland Security.
No, I've never even heard of this guy. I don't know who he is. And it's hearsay. He says he heard it from somebody else. And in polite society, that's the sort of thing that used to be frowned on. Now it gets news coverage. It's totally false. And I don't think there's anyone who's been tougher on Russia in this administration than I have been, or the president, for that matter, has been. I've been writing about Russia for years and years and years. I have a well-developed reputation on that. We've taken extraordinarily strong action against Russia on a whole number of fronts, from Nord Stream to their support of Venezuela. We've sanctioned more Russians than any administration in history. But I'll tell you one thing, that China is a serious threat to our elections. Iran is a serious threat to the free and fair elections here. And I certainly want reporting on not just what Russia is doing, but what China is doing, what Iran and what other bad actors are doing. But I've never heard of this guy. It's absurd.
National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, we appreciate
all right,
your time.
I love that interview. I'm going to play it again. Robert did an amazing job. I just remind people on January 29th on this show, he said this. Let's play that clip, what he said on this show. Coronavirus, Senator Cotton yesterday called for suspension of all inbound flights from China. Is that on the table, and do you believe that you are adequately prepared for the coronavirus in the United States?
It's an incredibly dangerous virus. We're meeting on it every day. The president's being briefed by his advisor.
We're meeting on it every day. I posted the whole transcript January 29th. There is no news in the Woodward tape if you actually pay attention to this show. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined by Michael Oren from Jerusalem. Good morning, Dr. Oren. How are you?
I'm good. Good.
My first question is, who knew? I'm holding in my hand The Night Archer and Other Stories, which came to me yesterday. I inhaled the first four. Then I am limiting myself to one a night before I go to bed. These are terrific. Who knew? Okay. Other than Danny Silva.
and my mother.
And your
and my mother.
These are terrific. These are amazing.
Thank you. Coming from you, boy, it's a great, great compliment. I got a couple I'd recommend for you especially. I think you love the story Metaxas. I think you love the story Fly in Fame, Die in Flames, about B-17s of World War II. Stories about conquistadors,
The one that got me right away, and Liberation is early in the book, so people will run into it. And I thought, first of all, does Michael Oren have a Holocaust survivor in your family? Do you?
Who doesn't in the Jewish world? Sure.
Okay. So I thought of Elie Wiesel and others and the burden of being a famous Holocaust survivor, which until yesterday I had never thought about. And what a remarkable burden it is. What prompted you to write Liberation, which is a short story about a famed Holocaust survivor?
Because I know many people like this. It's not just Elie Wiesel. It's a composite of many Holocaust survivors I've known who, as you say, have to bear the burden. And what burden they have to bear? They have to give people hope. It comes from a world without hope. And it comes at a tremendous personal price. Also, more broadly, as you may know, fame comes with a great personal price as well. So it's about all of those themes.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's worth the whole book, Michael. I also want to ask, do you have a child on the spectrum in your family?
All three of my children had the learning disabilities. I myself had learning disabilities. I had dyslexia. And so I've been there, done that. And
you've
so
got dyslexia?
Yes.
How in the world?
When I was a child, they thought I was learning it. They thought I was a simpleton. They put me in all the classes for the dumb kid.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And it took a long time to get out of that course.
Well, then D, which is the story of a father watching his spectrum son play, is heartbreaking. And then finally, I know the couple in Fossils. Everybody does, right? I know this couple because they are of a piece with the 50s, 60s, and 70s. But do you know this couple?
Well, because we're pretty much of the same generation. You remember that when we went to elementary school, all of our teachers had been hired during the Great Depression, during the 30s.
Yes.
And in the 30s, married women could not get jobs as teachers because they assumed that they weren't the breadwinners and they wanted to give jobs to people who didn't have a breadwinner, so they gave it to unmarried women. Well, it turns out that a large percentage of these women were gay. And when I went to elementary school in the 60s, it turns out that virtually all of my elementary school teachers were gay, and some of them were involved in relations with one another, including a principal of whom I was particularly fond. So that's the background to that story, Fossil.
So those are the first four stories, and ruin is just haunting. That's a play on words. People have to read it to get it. My plan is to ask you about a story a week as I make my way through the Night Archer and to cover the news. So I'm going to do that right now. How Thank big or important is the end of the tale on the Kosovo-Serbia agreement, which is itself brings to a conclusion, hopefully, a war that claimed tens of thousands of lives, but it also moves the Serb embassy to Jerusalem, and it promises a Muslim-majority relation, Kosovo, with Israel.
It's a significant breakthrough. It's one that I've been involved in over the course of the years. And here I got to give credit, strangely enough, to a Democratic congressman named Elliot Engel. You probably know Elliot.
Sure.
Elliot is the Foreign Affairs Committee. He's now been defeated by a very progressive candidate in the Bronx, but Elliot has a close relationship with the Kosovo community and worked for years behind the scenes to get Israel to recognize Kosovo. And several years ago, I said to Congressman Engel, well, if you can get Kosovo to agree to move their embassy to Jerusalem, maybe we could do this. Now, Israel was reluctant to do it because recognizing Kosovo, which broke away from Serbia in 2008, was sort of a precedent with the Palestinians, like unilaterally recognizing a declared state that wasn't declared within the framework of a peace agreement. You understand that precedent
Yes.
was problematic for Israel. But I thought if the Kosovoans would say that they would move the embassy to Jerusalem, we can get beyond that. And our relationship with Serbia was always very complicated because the Serbians did recognize Palestine as a state. We tried to stop it. We didn't succeed. I was involved in that, too. I can't, you know, say with pride I prevented it. So it was very, very complicated. The fact that Serbia and Kosovo then got together and made this agreement, it's like a year hiatus. It's a year break in the conflict. And in that window, Israel was able to move and establish these relations with Kosovo, get the embassy to move to Jerusalem. It's a breakthrough. 88% of the population of Kosovo is Muslim. So that is extraordinary.
It's a big deal. Not enough attention has been paid to it, but we will. And not enough attention has been paid to the Night Archer, but I will week by week. Quick question, Mike Lauren. National Security Advisor O'Brien on this show on January 29th declared the virus a very dangerous, dangerous virus. Do people outside of the United States pay attention to when the National Security Advisor speaks? Because apparently no one in the blue bubble media did.
It's here we're taking it very seriously. We are unfortunately number one in the world in terms of testing positive for corona.
Oh, dear. Well, good luck on that, and congratulations on the Night Archer. More from Michael Oren next week on his short stories and world affairs. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.